Greetings. Welcome to In Conversation with Trevor, brought to you by Heart and Soul Broadcasting Services. I go beyond the headlines and beyond the sensational. Today I'm in conversation with Blessed Mhlanga, senior journalist with HSTV and AMH. If you enjoy this conversation, remember to subscribe, to like, and to share. Let's get down to some work.
For some reason, the Zimbabwe Prisons and Correctional Services decided to smuggle me out of prison. I'm never going to stop doing the work that I do. It was just moving, Trevor. I was moved by the love of the people. I was so touched.
Blessed Mhlanga, so delighted to... This is the first time I'm meeting you since... Accused one, you came out of Harare Remand prison. What is it like to be outside?
Mixed feelings. You get so used to being in a place, and when you get out, you're just so indifferent.
73 days is a long time. That's about...
close to 3 months?
3 months.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was an experience, Trevor. It was an experience that went too long as well, but an experience where I learned a lot and began to appreciate things different.
Interesting. There's a lot of stuff to unpack there. So take me to the day 72, day 73, when you begin to receive the news that finally, the court has decided to allow you to get outside. Talk to us about what goes through your mind in that particular moment. There were delays. What did that do to you? Take us into your mind.
So Trevor, what had happened is that on day 72, that's where the hearing of the bail application was. My wife had visited prison the day before. I told them not to go to court. I told my lawyers that I didn't want to go to court because there had been a challenge in filing our appeal. So my lawyers filed that appeal, and it was rejected at the High Court, the registrar. And when they inquired, they were told that they were supposed to use the old case number. And my lawyer was, no, look, we filed the first appeal because it was a bail appeal. It was a different case dealt with by a different judicial officer. Then we filed this one, a bail appeal on changed circumstances. So it's a totally different case. So the idea was to take it back to the judge who had denied me bail in the first instance, because if it was an old case, then it would be a continuing case. So in my mind, after applying my mind clearly, I felt that, you know what, this is just going to be another bail denied. So I told my lawyer I don't want to go there, and I told my wife to stay at home because I'd lost hope that I was ever going to get bail. So nobody from my family went. I also didn't go to court because at that time I was also not really feeling well. In the past, I had forced myself to go to court even when I was not feeling well. So at that time, I went to the clinic. I went to sleep. So When I was told by other people who had gone to court, who were in that court, who were prisoners, that I was given bail, and some prison guards came to tell me, I thought they were joking. I thought they were joking.
Disbelief.
I just brushed it off, and when day 72, when nobody came to get me, I was convinced. Because, you know, when you're in prison, you don't have access to information. You don't know what's happening except what you're told. So I was just in disbelief. Mm. And in the afternoon, my wife came and told me of the challenges that they're going through and they wanted. And I told them, look, don't stress. I can go on day 74. Let them take their time because they've taken their time this far, you know. So I was indifferent. Mm. And when I finally got out, There were a lot of people by the gate, and for some reason, the Zimbabwe Prisons and Correctional Services decided to smuggle me out of prison from a different gate, from the normal gate that people use. So I had to walk around prison.
Why?
I don't know.
Mm.
For it was unexplained to me.
Talk to me about you sitting there, you're getting frustrated. You said you're losing hope. You didn't want to go to court. You didn't want your wife to go to court. What do you think is happening out there? Who is playing? Who is manipulating this whole process? What's happening as far as your own understanding?
Yeah, so Teva, I didn't lose hope. I lost hope in the system,
yeah.
But I didn't lose hope. I had my books. I was studying. I was studying constitutional law. I was reading through constitutional law. And the things that I was reading, I say this to other guys. I just hope the university can give me a distinction because I actually did a practical. I actually did a practical because I studied constitutional law on a practical level when I was in prison. I actually drafted my own constitutional application to challenge the constitutionality of the law after having read books from Maduku, from judges and stuff like that. I studied with an intention. I also studied criminal law, the Criminal Codification Act, because I was supposed to write criminology and criminal law. I studied, Trevor, on a practical basis. I spoke to inmates who told me their cases, and then I'd go to the criminal code, look at them, look at the defenses that were available for them, and I would talk to them and show them what they're supposed to do. And I also even helped about 8 to 10 people who couldn't afford lawyers to write for them their bail application. And of the 8, 7 succeeded. So I didn't lose hope, Trevor.
Sounds like you were on study leave.
Certainly I was. I mean, I did a practical in those courses, mm-hmm. a serious practical. Mm-hmm. And it led me to come to a conclusion that I think anyone who wants to be a lawyer, who wants to be a magistrate and wants to be a judge must spend a week in remand prison.
There you go.
So that they honestly understand.
Apart from testing the conditions in prison.
Yes. They understand what they're doing when you have a client in remand. What the client is going
to do. What does it mean?
When you're a magistrate, when you're condemning someone to remand prison, even without looking at the facts, what are you doing? When you're a judge and a bail application is before you, you honestly understand. You honestly understand the conditions. You honestly understand a whole lot of things. So I think that's important.
But my question, thank you for answering it that way. My question was, you hear that wrong case number and whatever.
It's normal.
It's normal.
It's normal. A lot of people have failed to get out on bail on the same day because of those mistakes. So I had come to be accustomed with it. So in myself,
these mistakes are normal.
They are normal in their system. For the 73 days that I've been there, over 10 to 15 people had their names misspelled, their serial number missing.
What does this tell you about our legal system, our judicial system?
Trevor, the biggest problem, in my view, is that our system is not computerized.
Okay.
So from prison,
manual.
It's manual. You have warrants of liberty that are written manually. You have tickets that are brought in manually. You have the judicial. The High Court is the one that has an EMS, and they are doing things computer. But they're doing it to people, to systems that are manual. So something gets lost along the way. It would be very simple for instance, Harare Remand Prison to be computerized. And when something happens at the High Court, they're picking it not from the papers that are filed, but from the system that's already in the...
You know, you remind me, we visited you twice,
yes.
Once with my wife and the other time, I can't remember who I was with. And I couldn't believe that when you get to the gate, they write pieces of papers on cardboard boxes, and then give you this piece of paper to go. I mean, I'm like, is this a country? Is this a banana republic? What's happening here?
Trevor, that's just the easy part. So when that piece of paper comes, it's given to a prisoner who runs with it to prison. And he goes floor by floor, because there are three floors, floor by floor, calling the name. Blessed Mhlanga, blessed Mhlanga, blessed Mhlanga. Right? Until you answer.
I'm laughing, I should be crying.
Yeah, you know, then they give you their piece of paper, and that's the piece of paper that, you know, they could have just put intercoms in the prison. So once a visitor comes, you just call out the name from wherever you are. And someone walks down.
Or a screen somewhere that beeps and stuff. But anyway, fascinating stuff. I want to take you to a place for me which is very important. It might not be important to a lot of people out there. So you covered two stories, the Blessed Geza interview. And you covered the POSB attempted heist. A lot of people suspect it's the Blessed Geza interview that created your problems. I actually I'm of a different view. I think your story, the HSTV story, on the attempted heist of the POSB is what caused problems for you. This is my own reading, and my reading is that you upset people in the Attorney General's office who had an interest in stealing POSB from Zimbabwean taxpayers. You upset and you walked on tours in the Speaker of Parliament's office, where there were people that were interested in stealing POSB. I don't think it's the Geza interview that caused this. Have you reflected on that?
So my apologies to everyone I upset. This is not my intention. When we do stories, we do this for public good. I was never arrested for interviewing Geza. I want maybe just put this clear. I was arrested and charged for press conferences, not an interview, right? A press conference that was addressed by Blessed Geza. And as he addressed that press conference, he was sitting with six other gentlemen. Is it five or six? I didn't say anything at the press conference. I was arrested for transmitting it, crying out loud for transmitting it. I am not a transmitter. HSTV is the one that has a license to transmit. It's the one that was given a license to transmit. I basically just work for HSTV, and I'm proud to work for them. I also, when I sat down to do an interview with Jelas Mawarede, all I did was probe him. He's the one who had this information. He's the one who I demanded that if you're going to sit on my shore and make allegations, you've got to have evidence. I'm not going to sit with someone making bold allegations and don't go where, you know, I just come and say, you know, people steal. Mm. And you've got absolutely no shred of evidence. And he brought it. And I have an obligation, Trevor, because I operate on a public trust. HSTV does not belong to me. It doesn't even belong to the shareholders.
It doesn't belong to us.
Of HSTV. It belongs to the people. If we want things that belong to us, they're our sofas, our chairs that we close in our homes. If we have information, people have to know it, Trevor. Mm. So this is what I just basically did. And in my prayer, this helped the nation save an asset. Right? It helped them. And I felt sorry for Ken. I honestly felt sorry for Ken.
Your CEO.
Yes.
He's the chairman of POSB.
Yes. But he didn't know this.
Mm.
And Ken does not know what is broadcast before it's broadcast. So when people were discussing this, I felt sorry. Like maybe they're going to think Ken is the one who brought this.
Who gave you the... There were allegations from some people in the Auditor General's...
The Attorney General.
Attorney General's office. There were some of those allegations, but he didn't know anything about this.
Yeah, but what's very important is, was the information factual?
Yeah.
Was it factual?
Yes, it was.
If it was factual, then we shouldn't be angering people.
So, as you sit there, 73 days, what was this for?
Trevor,
this is my view. I think they were punishing you. I think they were trying to send a signal out there. You have done amazing work, created a brand for yourself. You have become perhaps one of the prominent journalists that the country has. And this is my reading. Push back as much as you can. And this is my reading, that if we can go for him, put him inside for 73 days, the little ones around are going to be scared to talk. And we're going to send a message, chilling message. You don't do this. Even if you're blessed, we're going to come for you. Can you push back on that?
So Trevor, I'd want to first see the evidence that they have in court and see if they have a case before I make that conclusion.
Yeah.
Because probably they do have a case.
Yeah.
Probably they are not punishing me. Probably they have something that is really genuine. I've seen the state papers so far. I'm not convinced that they have a case. But I want to see what the state will do.
Mm.
But you don't send messages that way.
Mm.
If someone is guilty of an offense,
mm.
then they'll face their day in court.
Mm.
If they're not, you know, Trevor, you create hatred. Because my kids are hurt, right? And now they look at the government as a monster. My wife, we had no interest in politics whatsoever. And she suffered all that time. She now has an interest. My relatives, people who are around me, who believed in this government, don't anymore. I have my father's brothers who are war veterans, who fought in the war of liberation. They don't.
This has changed them.
It's painful to them. It cost them. They had to travel from Chipinge to come to see their son. They believed in this system. It has changed them.
Mm.
So you create unnecessary hatred. You don't send a message like that. You could just basically sit down with someone.
Mm. So you don't send a message like that. But what message has this sent to you? Has it frightened you? Has it changed you? Are you scared? Don't answer. I want us to answer those questions when we come back. At home, don't go away. Join us for this conversation with Blessed Nhlanga. See you on the other side when he answers the questions that I've just posed. See you on the other side.
We were treated like less than humans. Our crime was that one of the prisoners in remand prison had gotten a gun, allegedly from one of them, from the prison officers themselves.
Welcome back to our conversation with Blessed Nhlanga, senior journalist with AMH and HSTV. So, Blessed, before we took the break, I did ask you whether it had changed you. You know, I spent two nights in prison, Cranbourne Barracks, or Braeside Police Station. So, correct that, Braeside Police Station. And before I went in, I was scared. When I got inside in those two nights, developed amazing relationships with these criminals, proper criminals.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are not ashamed to tell you, I stole, they say I killed somebody, you know. And I don't want to be outside, Mdara. It's tough out there. I'd rather be inside. Okay. So I created an interesting bond in those 2 days. And they wanted my wife to bring cigarettes. So we'll bring cigarettes and stuff. So going in, I was afraid. Coming out, I was completely changed. I was so stubborn that my lawyer said, oh, you need to dress smart. I said, what for? I've spent the past two nights in tracksuits and truck bottoms. I'm going to go to court. And that's what I did, you know. And it changed me. the things I was tentative about, I became very firm in terms of opposing Robert Mugabe's corrupt rule, authoritarianism, being authoritarian, that word.
Authoritarianism.
All those things. I came out emboldened, strengthened, strong, prepared to fight those guys. Okay, and I noticed the same thing with Mark Chavunduka. When he went in and when he came out, completely changed. Very fierce, very determined to fight the system. What did this do to you?
So Trevor, we're knocking on the right doors. That's what I believe. We're knocking on the right doors. If we're not knocking on the right doors, no one would recognize us, you know. I've been arrested before, about 7 times, charged and acquitted in all the cases. I've spent a few days in police holding cells. Police holding cells are totally different from remand prison. But I've come out without any intention to fight anyone. I forgive those who are behind this, and they know that I have not committed a crime.
Bless your soul.
Yeah, I forgive them. But I'm never going to stop doing the work that I do. And I want to do it professionally. I want to sit there with those who are behind this and be able to have an interview with them without prejudice. I want to be able to practice law in this country because I'm studying it so that at one time I might practice it or understand it and be able to appear before the very same people who knew that they were supposed to give me bail, but they denied. And I'd still respect them and call them your worship and call them my ladies and my lord and plead the constitutional case of this country and write stories that are factual and professional. This is what I want to do. And I'm going to continue doing it. I will respect those in authority, the executive, the minister of justice, the judges of this country, because the constitution, whether we like it or not, bestows that we respect them because they are deposited with constitutional authority that is driven from and by the people. So because they have hurt me, I cannot rubbish the constitution. But I'm determined, Trevor, to finish my law studies, to be the best journalist that can be, to do more interviews.
To practice law at some point.
And I'm hoping I'm going to practice it at Alpha Media Holdings, defending defamation cases going out. Yeah.
That would be awesome. It's beautiful that you come out, not the way some of us came out. And I really love that. And I pray that you continue that way. So you haven't changed your mind about the people that came to your home and arrested you, knowing that you had not done anything. The people in the Attorney General's office who put you behind prison for 73 days, knowing that you didn't do anything. You forgive these people and you walk away.
Of course. But it's a system, Trevor. Mm. It's a system. I mean, as you built the empire, Alpha Media Holding, there's some people who hate you for my actions. And yet you don't know any of the things that I do at times. You know, these people, they're fighting for their salaries. They're fighting for their home. They need us as media to enlighten them.
Wow.
So that they understand the effects of their action to families. They arrested me. I was the problem in their view. But in doing that, they were not punishing me. They were punishing my daughter, who's supposed to sit for A-level, whose mental capacity has
been... Do you think they know that, or they were going for you? This is the collateral of their actions in coming for you. They've hurt your daughters. They've hurt your wife. They've hurt your uncles and all. But they were coming for you.
Yeah, so this is what I'm saying, that what we need to do is to educate them so that they understand this. they understand that they are not building a nation. Because if my daughter, who's supposed to write an A-level and pass and advance in school, fails,
on account of dad being inside for 52 days,
she's going to turn into crime. My sons are going to turn into criminals. And as a justice system, you are not helping make the country better. You're turning a whole nation into criminals.
Why don't you think they don't get it?
Because they haven't
been doing this for 40 years.
They've never experienced it. And some of them have experienced, they experienced this while they were fighting the war of liberation. So they think there's nothing that can be worse than what they saw. So because they used to have breakfast while a body was lying there, they think it's okay. They think, you know, we can do this because we saw this.
Take me to the most difficult moment of the 73 days, the most painful and difficult moment of those 73 days.
So Trevor, it was a Sunday. I don't remember the actual date of it, but on the Friday of it, there was an accused armed robber who had smuggled a gun. I'm not sure whether he'd smuggled it in prison or at court, but he had somehow got possession of a gun while he's at court. And he used that gun to make good his escape. So he escaped from Rotten Row. And this gun allegedly had been given to him by one prison officer, right, who was then also arrested. So when he made good his escape, on a Sunday at Harare Remand Prison, prison guards from Chukurubi Maximum came in a truck. They came inside the prison. We were locked in our cells, right? All of us undressed, naked. So my cell was on the first floor. We were marched out of the cell naked, being beaten.
Wow.
And
you were beaten?
Yes, I was. And walked down to the quad, and they'd poured water on that quad, and it was a cold day that day. We were forced to sit for 30 minutes, over 30 minutes, in the cold, on wet concrete, without any clothes. We were treated like less than humans. Our crime was that one of the prisoners in Remand Prison had gotten a gun, allegedly from one of them, from the prison officers themselves, and had escaped, right? We, as accused persons, are not paid to take care of other accused persons. We are not paid
to be informers.
Not to be informers, Trevor, because we didn't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
But we are not paid to secure prisoners. Those who were supposed to be punished are those who are paid for that particular job, to secure prisoners, to make sure they don't escape. You know, like for example, myself, even if the prison doors were going to be opened, Trevor, and everyone was going to run, I was going to sit there and wait.
Where does Blessing run to?
Or run for?
So you sit on the in the mud.
On the concrete slab.
You're being beaten in the water.
Yes.
You're naked.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was you know, that was the day I said, wow, we have no rights behind those walls. They can do whatever they want. You know. And I got so sick. I got a serious flu. The clinic didn't even have medication. You know. And
did that make you angry?
No.
Mm-hmm.
I had support, Trevor.
Talk to me about the support, because you talk about having Mike Chimombe and Moses. Is it Moses Mpofu?
Yes.
Who, you know, gave you this support. Talk to me about how those relationships were struck in there.
So what people don't know is that Mike Chimombe is related to my wife. Not by blood, though, but they grew up. My wife's house and Mike Chimombe just next door. So they grew up as kids together. And you know, when you grow up like that, you become brothers and sisters. So Mike Chimombe is like my wife's brother. But Moses Mpofu, I've known Moses Mpofu since 2009. I've had a relationship with him. And when I went to prison, because they've stayed in prison for 10 months now.
Remand prison,
right? So they were there for me. They shared their food with me. They made sure that, you know, Trevor, when you're in prison and you leave your water and you go to the visit, you must come and throw it away because you don't know what has happened. Mm. But I didn't have to do that in prison because when I went, they would take care of my stuff, you know? And I began to understand their struggle as political prisoners. Because going through their papers, because I'm studying law and I had to go through their papers and I saw the papers. They are in prison allegedly for offenses that have been committed by a company. Their company though, right? But you don't, the Criminal Codification Act is very clear on how corporate persons are charged. Mm. It's very, very clear, you know. So you begin to understand some of these things. And then you see that, like you said, when you went to Braeside, you had this relationship with criminals. When the criminals are inside, they're not criminals. They're really good people. They will show you the ropes. They will be, you know, not a single day did I...
They're amazing.
Yeah, not a single day did I get my own bathing water. A prisoner would bring me bathing water. Warm bathing water. I don't know where they got it, but it would be what? And I'd bath. And I'd be very thankful, you know.
The system out there throws you inside. The community inside embraces you and supports you. That was my experience.
Very big, very big support from the prison guards themselves, from the prisoners themselves. You know, they would just look at me and say, "Dimi mdara, tanga chwerenga nyadzeng," you know. And you don't understand the impact of the work that you do until you get people who talk to you about it and you never expected them to know.
Talk to me about, you're very reasonable and very diplomatic for somebody who's been in prison for 72 days, 73 days. Are your daughters and your wife and your uncles as rational as you are about what happened to you?
Oh, my daughter
is supportive of this job that you're doing.
So I have a message that came from my daughter, and she says to me, you know what? When I'm walking, she's a boarder, so she says when I'm walking in school, right? People greet me, the teachers, the students, they respect me for the work that you do. So she says to me. Some language that they use. She says, you inspire my mind and my mind too, you know, and
wow,
you know, so
powerful that
it is. And, you know, every time I talk about it, I get emotional because inspiring form ones, form threes, upper sixes, you think this is the TikTok generation. They don't watch what we do. You know, they don't know the work that we do, but they do. And they're inspired. Mm-hmm. So they support me. My wife did not support me as much as she does now because she used to think, you know what, this work takes you away from home until 11 midnight and, you know, at 12, you're not at home. Sometimes you travel a lot. I also need my time. But when I was inside and the community around, you know, someone would just call, would just call my lawyer and say, can you tell Mrs. Mhlanga to go to this fuel station and fill up her cars so that she has enough fuel to go to remand prison? Someone will just call and say, can we meet, can we meet at Food World? You know, I want to do groceries. And then my lawyer would call my wife and my wife would go there, get groceries for home, groceries for me in prison. You know, it was just moving, Trevor. I was moved by the love of the people. I was so touched. You know.
Yeah, it's amazing. Blessed, I had people calling from the UK, wanting your wife's number. Obviously, we protected her and referred them to HR I had people at Nyarota's funeral coming to me and giving me $10, $20. This is my contribution to Blessed. I had a friend who's based in Joburg coming into my house, and before she sits, says, "And this young man of yours," she took 300 crisp dollars and gave to me and said, "Give this to Blessed." What does this make you think about what you're doing? This is a crazy job. It doesn't.
It's not. Pay. It's not a crazy job. This is the best job ever, Trevor.
Why do you do it?
Because it touches people's lives, Trevor. Yeah. It makes business, Trevor. We give information to business so that they make informed decisions about their investments.
Do they appreciate what you do?
They do, but they're afraid. Mm-hmm. Capital is scared, Trevor, in this country. Capital is scared. You only realize that they appreciate when they're in trouble. They know where to run. They know.
So, what does this make you feel? You've saved the taxpayers the theft of POSB. It would have gone to some West Africans, Nigerians, plus somebody in the Speaker's office and the Attorney General. I keep on saying that because we need to know. There were people who wanted to steal POSB. You've changed the narrative of this nation through the interview that you had. You never said anything. You just put a mic before Blessed Geza. It has changed the tone of the conversation, the texture of the conversation. Blessed Mhlanga played a role in that as a journalist. Journalism is not a crime. You are not HSTV. But what you what does this make you feel?
I feel like I'm HSTV, Trevor.
Oh.
Look, I feel happy that HSTV played that role. I feel happy that HSTV allowed me to sit in that chair. Because, Trevor, we are having this interview, and it's going to be broadcast by HSTV. If HSTV decides we're not broadcasting this, you can't do anything about it. So I'm grateful that they allow my work, the work that we do with the team that is behind the cameras, to be broadcast. And it changes narratives, because that's why we're in this business, Trevor. Like you say, people think media is making money. It doesn't have money. So you see the narrative, why are the journalists not being paid and stuff like that? And you ask, are you buying the products? Where do they get the money? So we're not doing this for the money, Trevor. We're doing it for the value that it brings to this nation. On the center of what HSTV does and the MH does is to build a nation. Now, you don't build a nation without resources. You've got to first save the resources of that nation so that we can build. It's nation building. Exposing corruption is nation building, Trevor.
You say it. You've won a number of awards. Yeah. That as we close this segment, you've won a number of awards, and you say that whilst you appreciate the awards, you don't think that journalists should be motivated by awards. What do you think should motivate awards, particularly within the context of journalists not being paid on time, journalists getting brown envelopes and corruption and that kind of stuff? What should motivate a journalist?
The fact that someone walks into your house, Trevor, and gives you $300 for someone he's never met or she's never met. The fact that everyone has seen the work that you're doing and it has motivated them to do something. Trevor, there was a GoFundMe for me that went over 5,000. That was run by Hopewell.
Thank you, Hopewell. We appreciate. We see what you do.
You know, and most of the people, the BBC's Stephen Sacker put £100 there. He's never met me. Lord Oates in the House of Lords spoke about me. I've never met the man. I've never spoken to him. That's what motivates me, Trevor. You can't be motivated by a story that you write specifically for an award to say, I am going to take all these ingredients because I am trying to win this award. I think entering awards should not be for journalism. Maybe people should just sit down and appreciate a story and give it an award without a journalist having to apply to say, I am entering this story for an award. Because I know people who write 3 stories per year, just 3, for specific awards. And they do it for the award, not for journalism.
Blessed, we're going to take a break there. When we come back, I want to say that the state of journalism is pretty sad at the present moment. The toxicity that affects our society has affected journalism. And I want to hear what your thoughts are. And by the way, I've been accused of supporting Mnangagwa. You've been accused of supporting Nelson Chamisa. When I come back, we're going to go to that place. At home, don't go away. When we come back, we're going to go to those spaces. So see you on the other side.
After an election, Trevor, as a journalist, my responsibility is to trace the money. Who's collecting my taxpayers' money? Who's collecting Zimbabwe's taxpayers' money?
Greetings. My name is Trevor Ncube, host of In Conversation with Trevor, Zimbabwe's most engaging conversational show. I go beyond the headlines and beyond the sensational. We've brought before your screens change makers from arts, business, and politics, and from the region. Please join our growing community of viewers. Subscribe, like, and share.
Welcome back to our conversation with Blessed Mhlanga, a senior journalist with HSTV and AMH. So what kind of relationship did you have with your father? Your stepmothers have been nasty. What about your dad?
So my dad was a military man. He was a captain in the army. As a military man, he brought military tactics at home. So you never question instructions from my dad. You had to complain after duty. That's if you could complain at all. I developed some kind of rebellious attitude where I would speak for my young brothers, it permeated to school because I was at Eastridge Primary School, where I also began to speak for those who I felt could not speak for themselves. And eventually I harnessed that education and became a journalist for the school. I started at primary when I was in grade 4. I would go around the school team, school.
That's your beginning of journalism, as it were.
Yes.
Grade what was that?
Grade 4.
Wow.
Grade 4. So I wasn't really good at sport as well. So it gave me an opportunity to travel with the team, to travel with the cricket team, to travel with the...
An embedded journalist.
Yes, and then come back and tell everyone else on assembly on Friday what happened, during the week, how we beat Alfred Bay. And the like, so it groomed me at that level. And to say, Trevor, the education at that point was superb in terms of how you conduct yourself, how you speak, how you present yourself. These are things that we're taught at that level. Even just basic reading, which is missing me now. Like earlier on when we went to the break, you say journalism, you wanted to talk about that. It's not really because journalism is bad, Trevor. It's just that the education that we've received is different. It's different. You get someone coming from university who can't construct a meaningful English sentence, and yet their superpower is communication.
Yeah, tell me. I mean, I've been put on the spot for saying that. Would those people who can't construct an English sentence construct a good Shona sentence or a good Ndebele sentence? Is the education broken down both for Ndebele, Shona, and English? What's your sense there?
So Trevor, they can't construct meaningful storytelling sentences, right? I mean, they can speak, but when you're telling a story, there has to be some sort of rhythm in it, my teacher who taught me in grade 3, Mrs. Chari, she used to give us an example. She says when you are writing composition, it's supposed to be like These are your sentences. Mm. They have to have rhythm. Mm. You can't just write short sentences only or long, you know. You've got to vibe with them. And you learn that at a very, very early age, you know. And once you have mastered it, and also mastered comprehension, the biggest thing also is comprehension.
Yeah.
You go to, on Twitter, you find that people can't comprehend. You are basically discussing something else. And they have not heard what you are saying. They start something else totally different.
Let's go there. In terms of, there's a problem, journalists not being able to communicate, not being able to write. But there's also a bigger problem. Journalism is supposed to lead, to point the way for society. My sense is that journalism has become toxic because journalism is taking on the fights that are happening within the community and not providing direction. Is that a fair assessment?
So there are two things, Trevor. For me, journalism is a mirror of the society that we live in. So you cannot have a media space that is not toxic when they're reporting about toxic things, because our society is toxic. That's the sad thing about it, Trevor. But the other dimension to it, Trevor, in terms of the journalist leading, you know, right now things have changed from the time you grew up, Trevor. Right now, the society is leading because everyone has become a citizen journalist, so to speak. They tell their own stories. And they have the power to ignore if they don't like your story. They have the power to ignore. And if you look at the chat, people might not know you, Trevor, with the work that you've done to build the society, but they will know my Jerima. There will no mantiti. So where do we find ourselves as the media? Someone told me that if you give a kid candy or broccoli, they'll choose candy. But broccoli is healthier. So what is our role as journalists? It's to ensure that we caught the candy, the broccoli
with candy.
So when they think they're eating broccoli, they find...
Are we just doing that?
Yes, we are.
Are we doing that? Are we courting the broccoli with candy?
Yeah, that's why we are being arrested.
Okay. Are we stepping out? So the I want to challenge you there and say, yes, society is toxic. Yes, there's the thing about we are the mirror of society. But I want to say that we have a responsibility to step away from society and look at society from outside because of the role that society has given to us. I appreciate, understand the toxicity, but not become part of the toxicity. Am I making sense there?
No, you are, Trevor. This is why you find that when I was arrested, a whole lot of people came through, because we are doing that. And I believe we are doing that. This is the reason why, you know, when I sit down with Nelson Chamisa and have an interview with him, people think I'm ZANU-PF. When I sit down with ZANU-PF and have an interview, they accuse me of supporting Nelson Chamisa. Why? Because he's standing out and say, okay, Nelson, this is what people are saying. But we ask the questions that people want asked because we understand the people. And we step out and we say, in all this noise that's happening, what are the issues? Let's talk about the issues. You know, and we do that with so much passion, to the extent that it hurts other people who are happy. I think, in my view, they are happy with the media taking that toxicity, because when you take that toxicity, you lose the issues. And those who can, you know, who want to steal, they steal and step.
Tell me, so there's been, like I said, before we took a break, The very strong allegation, because Trevor stood up, and I did, after the coup, give Emmerson Mnangagwa a chance. And then I'm labeled for the rest of my life as a Mnangagwa support and apologist. You are perceived as a Nelson Chamisa and opposition person. How do you deal with that?
I sleep well at night, Trevor. My conscience is clear.
How do you do that? When you're being accused of.
Because I know I don't support Nelson Chamisa. I know I don't denigrate President Emmerson Ndambudzo Mnangagwa. Mm. I mean, President Emmerson Mnangagwa is the president of this country. Mm. This is what the law says. Nelson Chamisa is an opposition leader, was an opposition leader, and that's a fact. But after an election, Trevor, as a journalist, my responsibility is to trace the money. Who's collecting my taxpayers' money? Who's collecting Zimbabwe's taxpayers' money? We cannot go on a tangent and start asking the opposition to be responsible for taxpayers that are being collected by someone who has given a mandate for 5 years. If a hospital in Parinyatwa is failing, surely why should I ask Nelson Chamisa? But why? When people give a mandate to a certain person, it's just like what happened when I was in prison, Trevor. People were asking you to get me out. How? How can you get me out, Trevor? You don't have the keys. You didn't arrest me in the first place. Some were actually even saying you used me. And I'm asking, how did you use me? You didn't even know that this story was coming out before it came out. Right? You didn't even ask me to do that story. How did you use me? I'm an adult. I'm 45 years.
You're a professional.
Trevor, 45 years. I have a mind of my own. I do things that I believe are right. I do things guided by ethics and professionalism. In my space, Trevor.
Unoshandisa sana Trevor, iwe.
I work for Trevor.
Mm.
I'm not used by Trevor. Mm. My certificates, Trevor, are not written, validated Alpha Media only.
Right.
It's a choice that I've made.
Mm. It's a choice you've made for 15 years. I mean, I was sometimes you get surprised by when I'm reading. I didn't realize that you started at the Daily News in the cells department. Talk to me about your entrance into journalism. You studied at grade three. Is it grade three?
Grade four, yes.
Grade four. You are in the Midlands, practicing with the Midlands. Was it the Midlands Observer or
Midlands Muse?
Talk to me about your beginnings and your comfort in journalism.
So Trevor, my father passed on when I was doing Form 4. So I struggled to go to A level to do my Form 5 and Form 6. And after that, I couldn't go to university. Because I had no one to pay for my fees and support me. So I had to look for a job. And at that time, Trevor, there was this high political tension and the Daily News was a banned paper, right? So copies were being torn and bent in Kwekwe. And I looked for a job and I said, I can go and deal with that problem in Kwekwe if you give me this job. So I went to Kwekwe as sales and distribution for the Daily News. This is where people call me that I was a vendor. Yes, and I did vend.
I used to be a gardener, by the way. That was my first CV job, eh?
So I did vend.
Too. Yeah,
yeah. I sold the I would distribute the newspaper to vendors in Kwekwe, and then in the evening I'd go back and collect the
cash.
The cash and the returns if there were any. And at that particular time, Trevor, in Kwekwe we were selling about 5,000 copies of the
Daily News.
Yeah. And it was so difficult. So, you know, we'd take the Daily News and, you know, and fold it.
Camouflage it.
Fold it, you know, and put it in pockets. So it would be sold from pockets. It would be sold like we're selling weed. We're dealing weed because if you put it there, you know, these guys who alleged the from ZANU-PF that come and tackle the papers, either bend them. But we also then discovered late that when they confiscated those papers, that go and sell them and collect the cash, you know. so it was a very difficult time, Trevor. So the Daily News was then closed. Then there was this guy called Wycliffe Nyarota who used to run the Network Garden. He asked me to join him. And I started writing for him, you know. And at that point, that's when I decided I'm going to study journalism because I was making money for myself. Mm. But first, I did a diploma in advertising and public relations. Then We ran that paper from staff reporter. He made me his news editor. I was taken by the Midlands News. I became a group news editor because they had three provincial publications. So I was running those provincial publications. And so what then happened is there was a story, a Gokwe story, of this guy who had died, who had been killed allegedly by the children of a former Midlands governor. I forget his name. But the person was Chokuda. And there was this myth about him that he was refusing to be buried, you know, and stuff like that. And the story was run in the Newsday, and I read it, and I saw some defects in the story.
In the Newsday story,
I saw some defects in the story. I knew Tangresh Pangura from his days with the Parade. I called him, and I said, "You guys from Harare, you write stories from here, and you really don't know what's happening. There are some certain defects in the story. I don't think it was done properly." And he said to me, "I'm giving you a chance to write a proper story and write for us," because he was the news editor.
Mm.
That's how my marriage with the Newsday started. And I wrote from the Midlands until Tanga Ishpangula himself said, "No, we are underutilizing you," because it's rare, Trevor, to find a front page story coming from small towns like Kwekwe, when you've got Harare and Blawayo. But I would make sure that when I was there, every 2 days or 3 days per week, a lead story would come from Kwekwe. I had an advantage because the Emmerson Mnangagwa was and is still from Kwekwe. So I would get those big stories here and there. And he said, "I think we're underutilizing you." That's when he brought me to Harare. I owe him a whole lot of thanks. I also owe AMH a whole lot of thanks, because at that time, I'd not even had my qualification in journalism, but because I was good at that.
Mm.
And it's not because I couldn't have got that qualification, but because I didn't have the resources to go to school.
Mm.
And I then sent myself to school. I did a degree in journalism.
Where did we through?
No, with
correspondence.
Yes, Zimbabwe Open University.
Okay.
Because that allows you're allowed to remain at work looking for money whilst you're studying. And I did a distinction in the degree. So where you come from, Trevor, should never stop you from going where you're going.
Mm.
And I sat down and I said to myself, "Do I need to do a master's, Trevor?" I found I really didn't. It's better for me to have a wider base of knowledge to do another undergrad. So do law, you do journalism, you combine those two, they become powerful.
Mm.
And even as you serve as a journalist who understands law, even if I don't practice law, Trevor, but the quality of journalism that I can produce right now, because I'm coming from two diverse backgrounds, instead of me having done
just journalism.
Then do a master's, then do a PhD. My level of knowledge is like a pyramid, you know. So I decided to go and do another.
And you've stayed 15 years at AMH.
Yes, Trevor.
And then you walk into my office. We can't finish this without talking about that. You walk in my office completely from the blue, and you say, when we launched HSCV, and you said, "Chairman, do you remember what you say?"
So it's the same thing that I did it with Tangai, right? Because I believed, and I came to office and I said, "Trevor, I think I can change HSTV. I can improve it from where it is. I'm not saying it's bad, but I think there's something that's missing. I think I have it." And you asked me if I was serious, you know, and I said, "Yes, I'm totally serious. I want to do this." In fact, I had had months of having conversations with your management, Trevor, and they were refusing. So I said to myself, I had spoken to then CEO Kangai over and over again, and they were saying I was doing something. But I felt in my heart that HSTV needed me. So I walked into your office, jumped all the protocol. And I'm happy that you didn't turn me back, because normally when people come to you, Trevor, you tell them to follow the line, you know, and you gave me that chance. And I hope I haven't disappointed.
It's perhaps one of the best decisions that I ever made. What has made you stay? I mean, 15 years, it's not an easy place to be in. You get arrested, your salary doesn't come on time. What has made you stay at AMH?
You don't interfere with my work, Trev. That's the reason I've stayed. Not a single day have I been told how to write a story. Not a single day have I been told who to interview and who not to interview. I know you're a religious man, Trevor. You have your religion. I interview girls on HSTV, and I do my work, you know? And you've never come to me and said, please, we are not going to do this. So I respect the fact that at AMH, we believe that this product is not ours, and we are not writing for ourselves. So we cannot control what we want.
Absolutely.
We must listen to the people. So this is what has made me stay. I will stay, even if I don't have a salary. I will stay, Trevor, because I believe in this product.
You are not an easy person to work with.
I'm not.
Yeah. You are very difficult. And I can tell, talking to you, your upbringing comes in. You are very stubborn. Your mind is made up. What has it been like getting into management? You now run your own teams and so forth. You're not a very popular boss because you want things done in a certain way. What has the past 15 years taught you about yourself and leadership?
So Trevor, leadership is something that's totally new for me. Difficult. I'm asked to write reports. I'm not a reports person. I want to be on the field. So I've fought with my team, Trevor. But I'm now a popular boss, for your own information.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, because my team now appreciates that I want quality. Because they have been appreciated for that quality, you know? And when they walk out there, people appreciate the work they do. They're like, we're HSTV, you come from HSTV. That's good. We listen to your work and stuff like that. And they appreciate. And most of the stuff that I've retained in my team are people who came on attachment. And when they went back, they wanted to come back. You know, and they believe in what we do. Because when they went back to school, even their lecturers appreciated the quality that they had become.
Wonderful.
You know, I've lost some of the stuff that I have, Trevor, but I'm happy to say that the stuff that I've lost are leading in wherever they want, you know.
Well done.
And they always come back to me and say, you know, we thought you were difficult, but you just wanted the right thing. Right? And I think I take that from my father. My father was very, very difficult.
You've already told us, yeah.
And he didn't accept an excuse, right? So I've learned to say, even if the cameras are not working, Trevor, the story has to be told, you know. So my team, and they come and say, I'm like, I want that story. I don't want any excuses. I'm not going to have Olga come to me and say, why don't we have this story? I am not.
Olga is your GM.
Yeah, my general manager. Mm. And I say, it's either Olga fires me or I fire you first. There are two things to it, right? So I'm not going to let Olga fire me, because the moment she fires me, my child is affected. So you cannot be the slip between the cup and the lips for me. You can't. You can't.
You know, as we round up, I really want to give huge recognition to your wife, Florence. I think whilst you were in prison, I spoke to Florence maybe 5 or 6 times. What a strong woman of faith. What a supportive woman. I mean, like I said before we started shooting, every time I would call her, by the time I put down the phone, I thought I'd been cancelled. She was a pillar of support, a pillar of strength. So, Florence, well done for taking care of the family whilst Dara was inside.
Yeah, so on that one, Trevor, you know, I'd fight with everyone when I was in prison. My lawyers, my, other journalists and stuff. And she would counsel me, you know. And I didn't know she was that strong. And it has changed the way I view the marriage that I didn't even think she was going to support me that much. We need to support our women. We need to love them because they're very important, right? Especially when we can't do things for ourselves. I mean, this is a lesson that I learned in prison. I think that's why they call it college.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that moments such as these blessed teach us. What is prison and that season of being away? I mean, Hope World, thank you, Hope World, for raising that money. The community, society, a lot of people supporting you. What lessons are you walking out of the season with? Spending time in prison, the support that you've received. And the second question to that, what's the biggest story for the nation going forward do you think you ought to be focusing on? First of all, the lessons, what you've learned about yourself and the people that are around you. And then secondly, what's the story that we face?
Yeah, so I've learned, Trevor, that prison is for human beings. And no one can safely say they'll never be in prison.
Mm.
But I've also learned that crime in Zimbabwe is actually really out of need. Because if you go to a regiment prison, they're not going to get your guys from Poroto, from the affluent suburbs. You get people from Bari, from Epwet and stuff like that. That tells you something.
Mm.
It tells you that our society is deeply divided between the haves and the have not. The haves are living a good life. They hardly, if they have crimes, they have good lawyers who get bail for them and stuff like that. But this other guy, you know. But also importantly, Trevor, is that trials and tribulations do come, and we must not hold grudges, because it clouds our judgment. And if I'm going to hold grudges, Trevor, I need to be fired, because this job that I do is not for me. So it's not for me to bring my personal baggage and sit it in front of HSTV and broadcasting it.
That's powerful.
So that's a very big lesson that I've learned. If I was released maybe in the first 10 days, you're going to have a problem with me, because I would have been very bitter. But after 73 days, I began to introspect.
That's interesting.
Yeah. The other thing, Trevor, is that in prison, there's lots of faith in me.
Wow.
Those people believe.
Did it touch you, that kunamateko?
I was angry, Trevor.
Mm.
Like you said, some of them are open. They openly, know that they're doing crime. And when they are released, they go back and they come back.
Mm.
But these are the same people who are sitting there and say, God, please release me. I became a preacher in prison. And my word was always, you know what? Even your victim is praying as hard as you, so that you go to jail.
Mm.
So if you're praying to God, please mean it, so that you can really
repent first.
Repent, you know, so that if you are released, you're not going to come back here. So.
What's the big story for you going forward? What do you think is the big story for the nation?
Trevor, I think a book.
Okay.
I think a book to talk about what really happens behind those walls, Trevor. Something people don't know, but I think they need to know, so that when they do whatever they're doing with their lives, Trevor, they don't end up
in prison.
In prison, because prison is not a place to be, Trevor. It's not a place to be. You can't be there. You can't do anything for yourself, Trevor. You can't be there for your family, you know. And you become a burden to those who are outside, especially if you are there for a real crime that you have committed.
Yeah. Lester, talking about books, I'm looking forward to that book that you're talking about. We're going to turn over now to books. Your situation reminded me of this book by Victor E. Franklin, Men's Search for Meaning, which is called the classic tribute to hope from a Holocaust victim. One big lesson that I learned from this guy is a powerful lesson of almost what you're saying. You know, you shouldn't choose victimhood because you've been in prison. It transforms you and makes you a better person. But much more importantly, you said to me when I first met you in prison, I said, I wouldn't survive this. You said, oh, Chairman, you would survive it.
You would.
And his big theme there that is that the human spirit can survive anything.
Oh, yes.
That human beings can survive anything. But the most important thing is to learn the lessons as you go through, which is a powerful book that I absolutely recommend, Man's Search for Meaning. Nick Davis, it's a book that you need to read, Heck Attack. How the Truth Caught Up with Rupert Murdoch. This is Rupert Murdoch paying the police, paying politicians and journalists to write stories about the royal family and any other people that he didn't like. Rupert Murdoch has done amazing things, but I violently disagree with the way that he has done it. So great book to read. Trust Me, I Am Lying is a great book, I think, that a lot of CEOs ought to read. It's a playbook for the dark arts of exploiting the media. There are people out there who think that they can manipulate us, and some of them do find some of us, but then they can exploit. It's a great book. The other book is... I'll keep on recommending this, The Coming Wave, about AI. And I see a lot of books about AI that are coming out there, and I caution, read books from people about AI, people that have actually done things, built things. The AI wave reminds me of Y2K. Is it Y2K? The year 2000, when computers were going to change. A lot of people made lots of money from ignorant people. Right now, there's a lot of people who don't understand AI, theorizing about AI, writing books and doing podcasts. Be very careful. Be discerning about what you read about AI. But you need to understand AI. So those are my books. What books are you recommending? Accused number one.
So I read this book when I was in prison. I forget the author, but it's called The Informant. This is a book of something that actually really happened, and this is about journalism, how journalists have turned rude stories into books, right? This is about the prize manipulation in the United States of America that was done by a very huge corporate, and how it all crumbled, and you know, and it was a very amazing investigative piece. So The Informant. But the book that I encourage everyone to read, Trevor, everyone regardless of who you are, is Introduction to Law by Professor Lovemore Matuku.
Wow. Okay.
You need to read the Introduction to Law. It's a basic, simple book, Trevor, that just introduces you to the legal system in Zimbabwe. Because one way or the other, it will affect you. So you just need to know. So just grab a copy of the Introduction to Law by Professor Lovemore.
Thank you for that recommendation. I'll look for it.
It's a simple, easy to read. It doesn't have the jargon of lawyers and stuff like that. And I read it for my first year of journalism, and I said, people should just be busy. It's a very important book. So there are two books that I recommend.
Blessed, thank you so much. What a relief to have you outside. I mean, it life for a lot of us, my wife, the family, friends, could not go on the same with you inside. You have grown, Blessed, over the past 15 years. I'm so proud of what you do. Proud of, you are a principled person. You are a person driven by values and ethics. And I love that about you. So thank you so much.
I think you, when your lawyers are saying to you, you should go wearing nice stuff.
Yeah.
My lawyers are also saying that I just went to.
Yeah, I know you did those khaki stuff.
Yeah,
well done.
Yeah, I just, you know what? You make me wear them. I wear them. Yeah,
absolutely. Thank you, Senyo.
Thank you, Trevor. Thank you.
Thank you, Dara. Let's turn over to our viewers who are at home. I mean, for me, this has been an important story that Zimbabweans need to hear. Journalists do work for the public. It costs their freedom. In certain countries, and indeed in Zimbabwe, it cost them their life. It cost them time with their family. We need to appreciate the good work that people at Dara are doing at tremendous risk and self-sacrifice. But any society that's worth calling a society cannot be so without brave, courageous, principled journalists. So I thought we needed to tell the story. Remember, we are a weekly show. We are out every Monday at 7 a.m. on YouTube. To ensure you don't miss out on any of these quality conversations, I invite you to like, subscribe, and share. And we love your comments at the bottom of this video. Keep them coming. Let's engage. Until next time, cheers to you all. We'll be right back.